Welcome to the Messianic Message. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown. The order of Melchizedek is connected to the nation of Israel through Adam and Noah. Beginning with Adam, the order of Melchizedek is the earth's original and only king priesthood. Adam's Melchizedek role was a foreshadow of what Israel was later supposed to be. But, like Adam, Israel failed. But the failure really began after the recreation with the flood. The recreation of Earth includes humans that survived the destruction. There is a similarity between Noah and Adam. Noah had three sons, and Adam had three sons. Yes, I know Adam had other children after Seth, the third son, in Genesis 5:4. Three sons' names are all that is listed for Adam, and three sons' names are listed for Noah. It was the first Melchizedek that caused the downfall and eventual destruction of the earth, but the eighth Melchizedek will now act on behalf of Yeshua, Yahweh Elohim, to renew the earth. It was Adam's third son who inherited the firstborn Melchizedek position, and it will be Noah's third son, Shem, who will inherit the king priesthood from his father. It may be confusing to find out that Shem was the youngest, not the oldest, as listed in Genesis 7:13. It isn't until we get to chapter 10 that the actual lineage is revealed. Noah was in covenant with Yeshua Yahweh Elohim as the eighth human Melchizedek after Adam. It is for this reason that Yahweh was obligated to give grace to Noah. A covenant situation is created between sovereign kings and their vassals. Noah was a vassal to Yeshua Yahweh Elohim. For Noah, Yeshua Yahweh Elohim is the sovereign, even though Yeshua Yahweh Elohim is himself a vassal, whose sovereign is his own father. The covenant structure is important for us to understand who Yahweh the Son is and who Yahweh the Father is. It is also important for us to understand this so we will see that Yeshua Yahweh Elohim always upholds his covenants, both to his creation and to his Father. Noah found grace in Yahweh's eyes in Genesis 6:8. What is grace? The Hebrew word is kanan. It means directed favor or special favor. Grace, hanan, is deserved favor because of our obedience to the laws of our covenant with Yahweh. Sinners, the deliberately disobedient, called criminals in our modern vernacular, and Gentiles, those not in covenant with Yeshua, do not receive hanan. They receive mercy, chesed, which is what you get at the behest of the king when you don't deserve favor from the king. You might get help, and you might not. So it is best to be a good and faithful servant. Matthew 25:21 and 25:23 and Luke 19:17. We have a good example of both words in the account of Lot in Genesis 19:17-22. The angels had taken Lot, his wife and daughters, by the hand and dragged them from the city to save them. They told Lot to escape to the mountain, but Lot replied that he had found both grace, hanan, or special favor, and mercy, chesed, help that he didn't deserve. Lot got special favor to escape destruction because he was in Abraham's family. But when Lot mentioned the mercy, the chesed, he was getting from the angels of Elohim, he understood that he was getting something he didn't deserve. Why did Lot require mercy? It is because he was living among the Sodomites. He had not separated himself from the wicked and would have been defiled just being in their presence. Noah finding grace in the eyes of Yahweh means Noah was in good standing as a perfect or tamim man holding the office of Melchizedek, the eighth one from Adam. Genesis 6:9. The Genesis 5 Melchizedek genealogy lists 10 men who were in line to be Melchizedek's. Only 8 of them became Melchizedek, as I explained in the first teaching in this series, Melchizedek in the Untold Creation account. Noah is the last one listed in that genealogy. Apostle Peter explains this as well, 2 Peter 2:5, and he's talking about when Yahweh spared not the old world, but saved Noah the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. The word person there is italicized in the King James. It was added to the text. Other versions twist this scripture to say that Noah was the eighth person into the ark. Not so. Even though he probably did enter the ark last, as any good father and husband and priest of Yahweh would have done. No, Noah was the eighth Melchizedek. What does the title Melchizedek mean? I did not cover this in the first teaching of my series. Melech is Hebrew for king. The I is translated as my. Zedek is the English transliteration of the Hebrew word tzaddik. Melchizedek is Meleki Tzedik, or King My Righteous, in its Hebrew grammatical form. In English, My Righteous King. However, Melchizedek is also a priestly function in Hebrews 2:17, 3, 1, 4, 14 and 15, chapter 5, verses 9 and 10, 6, 20, chapter 8, verse 1, chapter 9, verse 11. Shem was the king of Salem and priest of the Most High in Genesis 14:18. According to Peter, Noah was a preacher of righteousness. The tzedek part of the title of Melchizedek is righteous. So, yes, Noah was a preacher of righteousness, meaning he was someone who called others to righteousness. Noah preached the law of Yahweh, who attributes righteousness to us because we first believe him, then continue walking with him in righteousness. Walking in righteousness means obedience to Yahweh's laws and that we are in personal relationship with Yeshua Yahweh. Righteousness is always defined by the law and expressed through obedience to it. The flood is tied to Yeshua's death and resurrection. Let me show you this. In Genesis 7:11, it says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up and the windows of heaven were opened." And in Genesis 8:4, it says, "And the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat." The second month of the ancient biblical calendar year, before there ever was an Israel, is what the Jews now refer to as the month of Cheshvan in the civil calendar. The civil year was the annual cycle until Yeshua Yahweh assigned a new calendar to Aaron in Exodus 12. The first month of the ancient calendar was a numbered month, but it is now known as Tishrei. This is the month of Yom Teruah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. The second month now has the name of Cheshvan. It was in the month of Cheshvan, the second month, on the 17th day of the month, that the floodwaters came. It was on the 17th of the seventh month that the ark rested on the mountains of Ararat. The seventh month in this civil calendar is now called Nisan. In the Exodus, it was called Aviv, and it became the first month of the feast calendar. Let's not confuse these two calendars. The 17th day of the month of Nisan, or Aviv, was Yeshua's last day in the grave. Now let's go to Genesis 8:6. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he made. Yeshua remained with his people after the resurrection for 40 days, just like Noah stayed in the ark for 40 days. Acts 1:3 says, "To whom he showed himself alive after his passion by many infallible proofs, being seen of them 40 days, and speaking of the things pertaining to the kingdom of God." Then Yeshua ascended. He opened the window of heaven and returned there. Acts 1:9 says, "And when he had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight." But now the account of Noah departs into a different direction, a prophetic one. Noah stayed in the ark for another 7 days, Genesis 8:10. "And he stayed yet another 7 days, and again he sent forth the dove out of the ark." There are 2 7-day periods with this dove. Why are there 2 7-day periods with this dove going out and coming back and going out and coming back? Well, I believe it reflects the gap between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. Yahweh Elohim created the heaven and the earth. It was complete in Genesis 1, but in Genesis 1:2 it was empty and void. Does this not describe what Noah would have seen from the ark window? An empty world, void of all life? Is this not the same thing? When Yahweh's Ruach fluttered over the earth between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, what would the dove, the Ruach, have found? Nowhere to put his foot, because there was nothing there, where before there had been something there. I believe Yahweh is reiterating Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. This shows us that the patterns repeat themselves. When we see the patterns, we can see the truth in them, and they go forward and backward in time. Noah sent out the dove again, and the dove came into him in the evening, and in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked off. So Noah knew that the waters were abated from off of the earth in Genesis 8:11. The dove's return means peace has returned. Everything is clean, tahor. Notice the dove returns in the evening of the seventh day. Prophetically, this peace will come after the second Gog-Magog war at the end of the millennium we are about to enter. The evening is the herald of the new day, the eighth day, which is also the first day of the next cycle, Genesis 8:16 and 17. Go forth of the ark, you and your wife and sons and your sons' wives with you. Bring forth with you every living thing that is with you of all flesh, both of fowl and of cattle, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, that they may breed abundantly in the earth and be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. Go forth and bring forth, Yatzah, in Hebrew, in both cases, is the same terminology used when Yeshua Yahweh commanded the earth to bring forth grass and living creatures in Genesis 1:12 and 1:24. Again, we see the flood is a renewed creation, a new beginning for the earth and mankind, and once again it begins with a Melchizedek, whose name is Noah. All of the first humans created in God's image are gone. There are no more humans left who were made in God's image. Noah and his family are all in Adam's image. The violent DNA provided to us by Cain is still in humans. There is still more to be fulfilled in this current 7,000-year cycle. Killing between humans, not Nephilim to humans, will become the major issue, and we will see that Yeshua will give a commandment to both humans and animals against the shedding of human blood in Genesis 9:5. Yahweh gave all the Torah to Adam. Noah knew all the Torah and lived by it. Otherwise, he could not have been a preacher of righteousness. The point of these accounts written by Yahweh through Moses is not to repeat the commandments in every instance, but to show us, by giving certain commandments, what mankind's next problem to overcome will be. In the case of Adam's rebellion, eating the fruit of the wrong tree caused life on earth to spiral down into more and more sin, crimes against Yahweh's law, wherein Cain became the earth's first criminal. The fruit of the fruit of rebellion, as it were, was Cain killing Abel. So now, Yeshua Yahweh Elohim is specifically mentioning the prohibition of taking a human life before repeating the original instructions he gave to all the living beings in Genesis 1, which was to be fruitful and multiply. Let's go back to Genesis 6:14 and forward. I want to address an attitude specific to the Christian church. The attitude is twofold. First is the idea that Jesus did it all. He fulfilled the law, so there is nothing for me to do but be nice to everybody and go to church every week. Yes, that's an oversimplification, but nonetheless true. Second, the rapture false doctrine is imbued with the idea that no special preparations need to be done before the tribulation because the church won't be on earth for that. The Noah account opposes both of those attitudes. Noah needed to prepare because he and his family would be going through the tribulation of his day, and he also had to prepare in accordance with Yeshua Yahweh Elohim's instructions. Noah didn't get to make up his own method of preparing, going where he wanted and putting in provisions in whatever way he wanted and only for whom he wanted. Yahweh had specific things in mind that Noah needed to do. Build an ark with specific measurements of specific wood and other materials, and even specifying a window. Work. It was hard work to prepare for the end. There is nothing in Yahweh's patterns that suggest anyone will get a free exit with no work and not having to keep commandments or the Lord's instructions. Genesis 6:17 says, "And behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die." The breath of life in this verse is not the same breath of life given to Adam, the human Melchizedek. To Adam was given neshama. The breath of life in Genesis 6:17 is the ruach, commonly referred to as the Spirit of God. How can it be that the ruach is the breath of life for all living things? It is because, quite literally, the ruach is the atmosphere we breathe to this day. Genesis 1:2 says, "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." The Spirit of God is the ruach, and the Spirit is still moving upon the face of the waters and across the dry land as wind in Genesis 8:1. We literally breathe Yeshua Yahweh Elohim's spirit. Every living being has ruach within, but not every living human has the ruach's power within. Acts 1:8, the baptism of the Holy Spirit is for us to receive Yeshua's power, power to obey and to be the emissaries of His kingdom on the earth. The air we breathe is the bare minimum required to keep humans alive so they will have opportunity to come to Yeshua and to receive the power of the ruach, and not be just barely alive. Now in Genesis 6:6, Yahweh sighs or breathes heavily within His own spirit at the infusion of wickedness brought about because He created man. Genesis 6:6 says, "And it repented Yahweh," Naham in Hebrew, "that He made man on the earth, and it grieved Him at His heart." This is regret, because it was man who defiled all of creation. Notice that it wasn't the fallen angels, the sons of God, which defiled creation. This is not laid at the feet of them. They were involved, but because they discovered that if they destroy the earth, Yahweh simply recreates it. That's in Genesis 1, 1 and 2. And He continues on. So they needed a better way to destroy the earth. They accomplished this by getting Yahweh Elohim's special and unique creation, humankind, to defile themselves by procreating with the females of the species. Not only were the angels messing with human DNA, turning man into an unredeemable species, but there are hints through other records, historical and archaeological, that the demons were messing with and mixing the DNA of other species as well. I believe the mythical creatures of ancient literature, which are still with us today in movies, are those mixtures. Every living species was so defiled that Yahweh Elohim had to take the few of each kind that were still undefiled, put them in the ark, and wash the earth and everything on it with water. I also find it interesting that there are two sixes associated with Yahweh's regret. In the end, we will deal with three sixes. The patterns continue, and they also expand. Rather than withdrawing His life-giving spirit from the earth, Yeshua Yahweh Elohim will now remove the wickedness and all that are wicked. This is always how Yahweh works. He gets rid of the wicked, not the righteous. This is another strike against the rapture that so many are looking for. After all the instructions for the work to be done was given, Genesis 6:22 says Noah did all the work that was commanded. This same terminology will be used when Israel, as a nation, completed the tabernacle and its furnishings. Exodus 39:32 and 39:42. Thus was all the work of the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation finished, and the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so did they. According to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel made all the work. The patterns run backward and forward. As we move forward in time, more details about those patterns are revealed, and we can then look back and see that the patterns began in the beginning, and Yahweh never did anything new. This is why Yeshua could rightfully say that the days of Noah would return at the end. We have more end times details in scriptures, but when we look back at Noah, that account affords some details about the end of days as well. So these patterns go backwards and forwards, which is how we know the Torah was being kept in the beginning. Also, Yahweh always requires our cooperation in all that has to be done on earth. In Genesis 8:20, Noah built an altar to Yahweh. As a priest of the order of Melchizedek, it was Noah's duty to make this altar. Because the altar is Yahweh's man-made symbol that says Yahweh is the creator and king of the earth. Noah agreed with Yahweh that it was Yahweh who owns the earth. Thus he built Yahweh's ownership symbol as a record of his belief. Anytime someone erects an altar to Yahweh, that person is declaring the earth as Yahweh's. This is so even if the person erects an altar in the wrong place and does a sacrifice on it, as some in the Hebrew Roots movement do today. The altar belongs to Yahweh, and he decides where and how it will be used. So, an altar erected in the wrong place, doing sacrifices where they are not intended or authorized by him, now brings a legal violation by that person before Yahweh. This is something we want to avoid. Noah, the Melchizedek, and later Melchizedeks erected altars to Yahweh in other places until Israel became a nation. After that, we do our sacrifices where Yahweh commands, and where he commands is Jerusalem, from which we are all now exiled due to the COVID lockdown in the modern UN-created political state of Israel. Genesis 9, verses 18 to 29, shows us the start of other problems in humanity: Ham's crime against the Melchizedek, who was also his father. Much speculation has been done regarding that, and I don't have time to talk about it here. I have addressed it in other teachings. The simple understanding is that this is where sexual deviation began in the recreated earth. Ham was not defiled in his DNA, even though some believe he was defiled through his mother. I do not believe that. I do not believe he inherited a propensity for sexual deviation. This simply proves that one sin always leads to another. There had been sexual crimes in humanity for which they were all destroyed. Now comes Ham with that same knowledge of those sexual sins. So we must ask ourselves, what is the purpose of sexual sins from the beginning? It is the veneration and worship of the demons, the fallen angels, who teach humans that they are gods worthy of worship. The primary means of worshiping demons is through porneo, fornication. This activity was once limited to the demons' temples, but now it is in our living rooms with R and X-rated movies and images in magazines and on the internet. These ultimately is where Ham's crime led to. One more thing. Noah being drunk in his tent was not a sin. Being a drunkard, a habitual drunk, is a sin. We are instructed to bring our strong drink to Sukkot in Jerusalem and celebrate before Yahweh, Deuteronomy 14:26. Noah had already built an altar to Yahweh on which, at Sukkot, are put many sacrifices. And wine is made from grapes that are harvested just before Sukkot. So when do you think this incident occurred? If you said Sukkot or around Sukkot, you would be correct. Noah was celebrating his relationship with Yahweh, as Yahweh would later formalize to the Israelites before they entered the promised land that they should bring their strong drink to celebrate before him. We all know what strong drink does to us, which is why the Levites are prohibited from drinking before they serve as priests. Leviticus 10:9. Chapters 9, verses 1 to 17 is the account of Yahweh's covenant with mankind. There are some very important consequences to be dealt to mankind because of this covenant that very few people understand or even know exist. Before I get to that, let's look at chapters 10 and 11. Genesis 10:1-2. Now, these are the generations of the sons of Noah. These are the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, or Japheth. And unto them were born sons after the flood, the sons of Japheth, or Japheth, and so forth. Shem is listed first because he was the spiritually mature son. Japheth, or Japheth, was not. Shem was the most capable and probably the most interested in doing the job of the firstborn. We will later see that other firstborns, such as Esau, have no interest in the responsibility of their inherited office. They want the benefits of it, but because of their self-interest and self-absorption, they disqualify themselves from their inheritance, which is why their fathers have the authority in ancient times to name another son as the firstborn in place of the physical firstborn. The spiritual firstborn is more important than the physical one. There is nothing said about Japheth's character, but given the later pattern of self-interested and self-absorbed firstborns who want nothing to do with Yahweh and who then lose their right to serve, we can safely consider that Japheth was this kind of eldest son as well. Chapter 10 is about the being fruitful and multiplying phase of humanity after the flood. The entire chapter is about showing us who the nations are that will still be around in the end of days, albeit some of them under different names. There are two important people in this chapter, Nimrod and Eber, or Eber. Nimrod is the founder of confusion. He, of course, got it from Satan and from Satan's demons and the now bodiless Nephilim. We know this because Nephilim will later lead all who are willing into worship of Satan through his demon representatives touting themselves as God, and the Nephilim bodiless spirits who do the demons' bidding. Satan now has a whole army of various classes of being under him who are now only functional from within the spirit realm. This is why he has sought a means of getting bodies from that time forward. We call this phenomenon demon possession. In the end of days, demons will possess humans through humans taking the mark of Satan's human representative, the Antichrist Jewish Messiah, and also through inhabiting the mechanics of AIs, artificial intelligence machines. Eber, or Eber, is Abraham's grandfather going back 5 generations. Eber's name lives on in the word Hebrew, attributed first to Abraham. But this should tell us that Eber's life was like Abraham's, or should I say that Abraham's life was like Eber's, for which Abraham was attributed with Eber's reputation as the first Hebrew, Eberu, Eber-like. Eber shows up in the list of Noah's descendants who would become the Goy, called variously Gentiles and nations. It would be so very helpful to our understanding if the English translators would be consistent in their transliterations, but alas, they are not, and we just need to know when the English Bibles speak of Gentiles and nations, these are the same people. It is a class of people created by Nimrod. Gentiles, the nations, all went astray by following after Nimrod. Eber shows up in Shem's lineage, which stops short in chapter 10 with Nimrod's followers, and picks up again in chapter 11 after the Tower of Babel, confusion, was destroyed. Babel, or Babel, is the underpinning of all 3 appearances of Babylon in Scripture through time. There was a Babylon that was conquered by Egypt. That one was founded by Nimrod. Then there was a revival of Babylon by Yahweh, who brought them to punish his people. There will be a third Babylon called Mystery Babylon in the end of days. Mystery Babylon combines the mystery religions that were started in Nimrod's Babylon, but further and more fully developed in Egypt, with Nebuchadnezzar's Babylonian government style that required worshiping his image. Mystery religion, Babylon government. Yahweh scattered the Goy, who made the Tower of Babel, those people who choose not to walk in the ways of the Melchizedek, Noah, and Shem. Literally, a Goy is a rebellious person by default. The nations are groupings of rebellious people, Goyim. The nations are rebellious by default. It only took to the 3rd generation for there to be a huge fall in the behavior of mankind. I want to point out something that should be obvious and which is important in our day and age. It is that the Goy, the scattering of the nations at the Tower of Babel, were not scattered and separated because of skin color or culture. They were scattered because they were united in their rebellion against Yeshua, Yahweh Elohim. Yahweh never associates his salvation with skin color, as does the black Hebrew Israelites today. Now, I want to speak about the covenant that Yahweh made with mankind. Actually, the covenant was made with the human order of Melchizedek and the creatures of the earth. This is important to understand because it affects the manner of the world's destruction at the end. Genesis 9:8. And God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, so here we see Yeshua Elohim speaking to Noah and his sons. Here is where the importance of our understanding begins about who humanity is even to this day. I said before that all the Genesis 1 humans had been destroyed. The only humans left were the Melchizedek humans. Noah and his family are a Melchizedek family from whom will come all of the earth's population from that time to now. What this means is that Noah's three sons were the preacher's kids. You and I and everyone else who has ever been born since the flood are the preacher's kids. Nimrod led the preacher's kids into rebellion so that a new class of humans had to be invented, Goy, Gentiles, nations. Nonetheless, rebellious or not, they and we all are family members of the order of Melchizedek clan because no other clans survived the flood. And, more is expected of those kids, right? Genesis 9:9. And I, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you. See? This is why Yeshua now has to select a few good people who won't disqualify themselves as Nimrod did and the Goyim to serve his royal priesthood. This selection will take from Noah's time to the end of this current 7,000-year cycle. Genesis 9:10-11. And I establish my covenant with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth, and I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. This is the covenant with every living creature on earth of any species. Yeshua Yahweh Elohim will never again use water to destroy the earth. This covenant does not say he will never destroy the earth again, because he fully intends to wipe the earth clean the next time he destroys it. There is a huge and specific reason for the way the earth will be destroyed, which only makes sense in the light that all human beings are descendants of the eighth Melchizedek, Noah. Hang in here and I will explain. Genesis 9:12-13, and God said, "This is the token of the covenant, which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth." What is this bow? It is Yahweh's light spread out to show its colors. Starting with the Noah generation, Yeshua Yahweh Elohim will begin to reveal to us who he really is. This revealing process will continue to unfold his magnificence until the end of the seventh millennium, which we are now approaching. We don't know all there is to know about Yeshua even now. We all have ideas about him, each in our personal ways, but we will one day know him in his full light, in this rainbow light, this prismed light. The LGBTQ community under Satan's command has usurped this symbol because Satan knows what this rainbow means, and he does not want humanity to know Yeshua. That is why Satan has tried to make the rainbow his own. He wants people to think he is the creator. Genesis 9:14-15, "And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh." Here is Zakar remembering, God remembering. But he won't only remember his people. There is a time coming when he will remember this covenant. Yahweh remembering this particular covenant has end times consequences that few people understand. And let's examine this. To start, when Israel's broken covenant was renewed in Deuteronomy 17, Yahweh called heaven and earth to be witnesses against Israel if they sinned in the future, in Deuteronomy 4:26. The reason Yahweh can call these two entities as witnesses is because he created them and they operate at his behest. Genesis 9:15 is the same kind of covenant. It is between Yahweh in heaven and all the earth. Israel was a Melchizedek nation, and on them come the same covenants and requirements that all Melchizedeks had from the beginning. Let me tell you what Yahweh's remembering of this specific covenant will mean for rebellious mankind, even the rebellious Christian and Jewish goy, who say all mankind are children of God. Not true. We are children of Melchizedek. As such, we are supposed to live up to a higher standard of conduct. The preacher's kids are held to a higher standard, but most of the Melchizedek's kids live in sin. The religious kids are the worst. What is the consequence to a Levite priest's daughter who becomes a whore? This is a woman who is both an adulteress and an idolater, a worshiper of demons, called Zana in Hebrew. Leviticus 21:9, "And the daughter of any priest, if she profane herself by playing the whore," the Zana, "who profanes her father, she shall be burnt with fire." The high standards of conduct for the order of Melchizedek is reflected in the higher standards of conduct for the Levite priests over those of the other tribes. If the daughter of a priest becomes a whore, she is burned with fire. The whole earth, all the people of the earth, are the daughter of Melchizedek, the same way that the ancient Israelites are the daughter of Jerusalem and the daughter of Zion. The word daughter is a metaphor for the people. Yahweh is the king of all the earth, and the people are his Melchizedek people, his Melchizedek children, who have been given the power to become sons of God, John 1:12, by accepting Yeshua as their Messiah and King and God. And just look what they've turned into. Talk about whores and talk about the fires that are coming. This is why the earth will never be destroyed by water again. Water punishment is part of a trial to determine guilt or innocence. Noah went through the water and lived through it. He was innocent. The Israelites went through the Red Sea and lived through it. They were innocent, at least in that moment. Pharaoh's army went through the Red Sea and drowned. They were guilty. But fire, no one lives through fire without Yahweh's help, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There will be some who come out on the other side as Yeshua's bride. But she will come through the fire because she will escape to the same Exodus wilderness where she was the first time, and she will be protected from the fiery destruction by Yeshua Yahweh himself. The reason the people will come through the fire unscathed is because they qualified as the preacher's kids. They lived up to the higher standards of conduct given first to Adam, then Noah, then Israel, then everyone who came after Yeshua's death and resurrection. They will qualify to serve as Melchizedek king priests with Yeshua during the 1,000-year millennium, unlike their firstborn ancestors who failed in the Exodus wilderness. Some Gentiles will make it through, according to Isaiah 66, verses 20 and 21. No one knows who they will be or why Yahweh spares them. He will choose who survives, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, for a particular purpose. One purpose could be so that the king priests of the order of Melchizedek would have people to rule and reign over. Genesis 9:16 and 17. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said to Noah, This is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. Are you living up to the higher standards of the order of Melchizedek as laid out in the Torah's commandments? You are a son or daughter of Melchizedek. Are you living like those first humans who perished, those who will perish in the fire brought on by rebellion? Here is a word of encouragement, Isaiah 33:14-17. The sinners in Zion are terrified. Trembling grips the godless. Who among us can live with the consuming fire? Who among us can live with everlasting flames? The one who walks righteously and has spoken sincere words, who rejects gain from extortion and waves his hand, rejecting bribes, who blocks his ears from hearing plots of murder and shuts his eyes against seeing evil. This is the one who will live on the heights. His refuge will be a mountain fortress. His food will be supplied, and his water will be guaranteed. Your eyes will see the king in his elegance, and will view a land that stretches afar. There is another Noah teaching on my website from 2015 that has other details and insights. Be sure to listen to that one, too. This has been Kimberly Rogers Brown from TheMessianicMessage.com. Thank you for listening.